Well, we've now come to the open forum, which is one of the most important times of the conference, because you're all able to ask the questions you've always wanted to ask. And it's when we can come together as a group to question the panel. Now, before we begin, Paul would like to say one or two things.
This is the quick marketing plug before you all disappear. So we know there's a lot of people here who are not yet members of the network, and we would love you to become members of the network. And so, first of all, I hope you've really enjoyed this weekend. And we have lots of other activities on, so please, please do go to the network website and look at events and future events, and you will see we have a huge number of events, some of them collaborative and some of them are just organised by us. And I believe at the bottom there's a load more button, so you can see even more events, and we hope you will keep putting those in your diaries and think very seriously. So I'd love to see you down in Plymouth. You'd be very welcome. So that's a very different type of activity. It's where our members get together. We do have a theme. We have one well-known speaker, but we also ask you to come and give short papers. And I think, David, you wish to receive the ideas of the papers beforehand, and then we'll try and put a balanced program together.
About the end of May... I need your input, and the same applies to the Continental meeting. And I hope there's.
Yeah.
I know that some people have already said they want to come to the Continental meeting in Poland.
Yes.
And that also the program will be made up of papers and or you know, presentations submitted by members.
So you might notice it says 7th of September, but that's just the start date. We don't have a way of putting more than one day on the. Oh, does it say underneath? Oh, yes, it does, 7th to 11th, and the same with the Plymouth one. So lots of exciting stuff there. I'm not going to take your time much longer, but please remember that, and remember we have this Mystics and Scientists forum. So if you click on Mystics and Scientists forum, you will find something which is here. And if you click forum on this here, then you will see there's space to be able to put some comments on either Friday, Saturday or Sunday's talks. Okay, and we would love to hear from you. So if you've got some burning things to say, and you know we don't have enough time for the microphones to go around, then please be part of that. Also, you will see on here we have the word docs. So if you click on documents, we will have, and there already are, some of the PowerPoints, if you click down, and so you can see what we have got. Okay? So
those
we can discuss.
Those people who have some calm things to say, they can also say something, right?
Of course.
Not only burning things.
Really cool questions.
And just to finish off, I'd like to say one of many different new things we're busy doing is this online learning platform, which is a Moodle-based platform. And so we have put Natalie's course that's been tested over a good few years, but we're actually putting it online. So we need a few people, I think, to try this out who would like to be students, and then people who would like to... And then we're going to offer it, but there will be payment in the future. So we hope to try and get this accredited as a 10-credit module. So it's new. Also, if anybody here has ideas for a new module or course that they might be interested in getting online, then we would very much like to hear from you. Okay? Either areas you think we should be doing or things that you could offer. So we have the learning platform. We just need you to become involved. And then we can offer a lot more. Okay, so that's probably
Okay, thank you very much. As you can see, a very dynamic group is the network. And so all you people who haven't joined, join immediately.
And Charles and Chiara is at the back waiting to hear from you.
I'll just at the moment remind you of my course, which is called The Awakeners. Chiara, if you send in your email address, I will let you know, but it'll go up on the website anyway. Okay, now it's your turn. You have the panel in front of you. You're going to have some questions. When you give your questions, make sure that they're short, or if it's a comment, say short comment. If you can direct it at one person, fine. If not, then I will ask other members of the panel to speak. Paul, you hold the microphone.
For Malcolm, but I would like to actually hear the views of other people in the panel. I noticed when Malcolm was giving his presentation and he started talking about LSD, there was a lot of squirming in the audience and people who said, And yet, I think we've come a long way since the 1960s. And there's, of course, the work of Stanisław Grof and also Christopher Besch. Those of you who might have read Dark Night, Early Dawn would recognize that this is an incredible work which is based largely on a lot of research done with LSD. And I would like to perhaps ask some of the panelists, Malcolm and others, to give their opinion on what they see is the role of such an approach in a spiritual quest today.
Go on.
Well, as I said earlier, that the use of hallucinogens is about 3,000 years old insofar as we know, with the ancient shamans up to shamans of modern times. It is a way, if it's handled correctly, that's to say that if your consciousness is in the right place when you take it, it is likely to lead to useful results, in my case, illumination and knowledge. Now, having said that, it is my belief that within the next 5 years, people will have found the way to alter the neural patterning of the brain and produce the same sort of results without drugs. That is, unless you want to spend the next 20 years in serious meditational practice, in which case you might come to the same point as I did rather quickly. Sorry about that.
Malcolm, you were going to say something about your second meeting with Stan Grof.
Yes.
It might be a good opportunity to do that.
Yeah. Now, Stan Grof, who is now the president of the International Transpersonal Association and a man of considerable standing in the world, certainly had more than 3 acid trips. I mean, he was at Esalen doing masses of research on it, it doesn't seem to have affected his ability to become somebody really useful in the world and responsible for many people's, for the growth of understanding of many people. Now, the second time I met Stan Grof was at a conference in Davos given by the International Association for Humanistic Psychology. I'd been invited, it wasn't quite like that, but one of the Rican Trust supporters, lady called Eleanor de Tiger, offered me, while I was just a co-director of Rican Trust, offered me 3 months in the States where I would meet all the American luminaries, and she would set up a trip for me, including
Ed Mitchell,
who went through his extraordinary experience on the space capsule going up to the moon. Edgar Mitchell. he was coming back when he looked back and saw the world, and he had a mystical experience which changed his life. And I would have liked to meet him a lot. Unfortunately, I was so busy with Rican Trust that I couldn't take up the offer. And I said, instead, can I go to the internet? Would you sponsor me to go to the International Humanistic Psychology thing in Davos? And she said yes. So I did that. And Stan Grof was, of course, speaking at it. And he gave a workshop showing how to enter into mystical states through the use of breath and music. And it was quite an extraordinary experience. We all lay down on the floor in the conference. I mean, there were hundreds of people on the floor with somebody looking after them, sitting next to them. And we all started breathing. he put on very loud music, music which changed its tempo. Small pieces of music, sometimes working for 30 seconds, other times for a couple of minutes, and some wonderfully uplifting music, and music to keep on changing your mind and emotions. So I did this, and sure enough, had some very nice experiences. And then I thought afterwards, I don't know, gone to so much trouble to enter into a changed state, an altered state, but it's important that the mind gets focused so that when you enter into that state, something valuable can happen. So I started with my more advanced students on transformation journey, spending time focusing their minds on various aspects of spiritual knowledge, various aspects of themselves, and taking them through spiritual exercises that would focus their minds so that when they entered into this mystical state, which could undoubtedly be accelerated by the use of music and breathing, that something useful would happen to them. So, in fact, and that is what we did. A few years later, I took a group to Turkey. And part of that trip was to go to Konya, the place of the whirling dervishes. And also, I wanted to find a particular teacher who I knew worked in a carpet shop. There's hundreds of carpet shops in Konya. And strangely enough, the first carpet shop I went to, I felt I wanted to go into, was the carpet shop that he worked in. He was a sheikh, a man of a lot of ability and very wide knowledge. And I said,
Malcolm, can you keep it fairly short,
okay,
do you think?
Right. They have a method of entering all states of consciousness called the Zikr. The Zikr is absolutely secret. Hardly any Westerners have experienced it. However, he allowed us to go into his group and experience the zikr in the church. It's a combination of movement and breathing and focus. So that's what happened as a result of me meeting Stan Grof.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Anybody else like to say anything on this? The whole field is changing. You've heard of breaking convention. 3,000 people gather in South London at Greenwich each year. Drugs are discussed. Drug research is now on in 3 or 4 colleges in London, certainly some in the States. We're beginning to understand the process of it. And so I think that as this develops, drugs will be not only developed, which target these things more specifically, especially, but also it will spread in the treatment of things like alcoholism and depression. Okay, next question.
I'd like a comment from the panel on this. I'm getting increasingly uncomfortable with the use of the word spiritual all the time, like materialistic. It seems that whenever someone has an experience that they can't explain physically, it's spiritual. Now, I'm not suggesting that spiritual is the top level of the Empire State Building, but I am suggesting that a real spiritual experience is the rare efflorescence of the fully developed, refined, and perfected human being. What people call spiritual is very often psychic. Now, it's not just a cut-off point, there are gradations. But please, can we distinguish between spiritual and psychic? I would also like to suggest, and the beauty of being in a safe space is we can say these things amongst friends, is that psychedelic drugs are not going to produce a spiritual experience. They will alter your state, but don't call it spiritual, please. Because anything that is genuine has got to be earned. You would not win Wimbledon by taking a drug. You would not play in the Royal Festival Hall by taking a drug. For goodness sake, the real spiritual experience, as I said, is the rare blossoming of the fully functional human being. Can you break into a bank and get £1 million and say, I've earned it? No.
Okay.
If I may say so, taking drugs or anything for a spiritual experience is bursting into the divine bank.
Okay, thank you. Yes, go on, Marilyn.
Yes, I remember Rajneesh taught us that to arrive on the top of the mountain having taken some drugs, you know, to achieve some altered state was absolutely not the way that you had to climb the mountain. And really, you know, before people take drugs, they should try 3 deep breaths. Just stop, breathing slowly, counting 3 to 4, hold for 2, breathe out slowly, counting to 5, hold to 2. So if anybody wants to do that, just 3 deep breaths consciously, being aware of the gap between in and out and out and in. And just do that now, you'll be in an altered state. So I don't think drugs are a good idea.
I just wanted to go to the first part of the question asking about spiritual and psychic. I think that it's, again, back to the problem of language, of what you define of spiritual. And I think that something that seems to have come up again and again is that in English, it's quite difficult to find a word that is fully encompassing what we mean. So Jung talked about how Tao might be a good word, but there wasn't really an English equivalent for this. And also I think something I didn't manage to talk about yesterday was like the state of children and how we can actually expand our whole idea of something that's being spiritual. So my amazing English teacher always told me this story of his little girl going into a forest, and she was about 2, and she had never been in a forest before, and her face was just lit up. She had never seen anything like this before. She had no sense of separation of what she was seeing and what she was. And in that sense, you could actually call that a spiritual experience. You could say it's what we know. We've done that when we were tiny. It's like sort of this whole remembering idea as well. So I think it's just, it depends on how you define spiritual.
Right. Just make a short comment on that.
Yes.
David.
Yeah, a very short comment. Eddie, I think you made the point very well. But I think I would also distinguish between spiritual and mystical. And I think what you've described is a kind of ultimate mystical, or referred to as ultimate mystical experience. And as Charlotte said, there are many gradations, as you said too, between the psychic and the spiritual. And you can also just use this term inner, if you like. So there is a terminology issue here, because we're trying to put labels on things that are ineffable. And you can't exactly define them anyway.
And I wasn't saying that I had become spiritual because I took some drugs. I was saying it altered my consciousness to the point where a whole lot of mystical spiritual experiences followed at a later date.
Gave you a taste.
Okay.
Gave you a taste.
Well, it just happened.
And anybody, and anybody
I have to
else
say this,
want anything?
That in the next, in my opinion, within the next 5 years, if not sooner, people will develop exercises, just exercises, which will reprogram their brains. It will light up all these neural pathways without any drugs, without any meditation. It's going to happen.
I'd just like to... I'd just like to add that it felt that the drug piece was being maybe a little bit unfairly represented in the cultures where this is a thing and has been a thing forever. It's not like, in my understanding, you just take it and that's it. It's a lifetime of practice with these things, and it's a lot of spiritual work goes into it. So it's not just a pop a pill and expect that to be the case. So just that we remember the traditional uses that is perhaps not as we were just talking about it.
You know, it would seem really fairly obvious that truth is something which we need to prepare not only to understand it, but to withstand it. It can, without proper preparation, it can make psychically sick, physically sick. You can go into any monastery, you will find, because it's a hard sort of situation there, always in every monastery you'll find one or two people who are a little, let us say, different. No, it's actually extremely important to make distinction, very many levels of spirituality, if you like, or levels of consciousness. Every teacher has spoken about a fundamental transformation that is required. We even sometimes subscribe to the idea, as long as we don't have to change. The fundamental requirement is a complete freedom from oneself and from fear, from craving, from desiring. Now, if drugs can help that, that will be wonderful, but it will completely surprise me. So, in a way, we have been subscribed to the idea of transformation, but don't feel that we should undertake this. Like St. Augustine in the Confessions actually says, Lord, give me poverty, give me chastity, but not yet.
Okay, next question. Who's got the mic?
Well, I had the mic, but it was on the war on drugs and spirituality. Now, I just thought that we have to be very respectful of other people's way of getting in touch with a numinous quality, and that many of the designations we use for things, what we call drugs or spirituality or whatever. I mean, I was thinking many of us would have been burned in the stake for just a few hundred years ago or excommunicated. So, you know, have a respect that you need a kind of ceremonial, a kind of preparation, but that maybe some of the stuff that some of us see as forbidden or illegal may have other ways to contribute to our civilization. I think we could be a little open.
Okay, thank you very much. Next question or comment?
To Marilyn in particular, but just before I ask you the question, I will mention that I also did a workshop with Stan Grof about 20 years ago, and I laid on the floor for over 2 hours, and absolutely nothing was happening apart from all the racket that was going on around. And suddenly, the music changed to Ave Maria, and at that point, there was a big change in the energy relative to me, and I was told things that I would be doing in the future, and I was arguing that can't be possible. Didn't so-and-so happen? Yes. And didn't such-and-such? Yes. And it went on this way, and then eventually I got, well, we are telling you that you will be doing so-and-so. So that was an interesting experience. So, Marilyn, it was relative to your talk together with Merlin, that there seemed to be a common theme that you go back to various stages. And what I was wondering is, if you go back far enough, do you need to know the scientific explanation, or can you change the present physical situation with a change in consciousness at a deeper level? In particular, I'm looking towards the possibility of healing cancer that way.
Yes. It's the stuff of Dean Radin's work, isn't it? Can one's consciousness change your material world? Yeah. It's not something that... I'll wait till Tivi is finished. Can one's consciousness change the material world? It's not something that I've been aware of, a direct connection between my consciousness and the material world, but I wouldn't rule it out. I think the state of my consciousness might make me more or less available to insight coming from from out there. That I'm susceptible to receiving information, or I'm not. But I don't... So I'm just open to that, but I wouldn't say that I could do anything reproducibly in that area. I'm just open to the possibility. Is that okay?
I don't know. I'm just asking you the question.
Yes, well, other people probably have got more to say about consciousness affecting reality.
Got any views on this?
Don't know who.
Merlin. It's one of the. It seems like one of the big mysteries in the sort of central heart of the psycho or the scientific medical orthodoxy. The placebo. Everyone agrees this is a thing, and it's enshrined in all pharmaceutical trials. They're always testing against placebo, and the placebo is just that there is an influence between your mind and your belief and your physical body. So that feels like that's not a big doubt. My father told me this great story about a hypnotist once he saw who hypnotized someone from the audience and came up and he said, I'm going to burn you with this cigarette, which was a pencil, and touched it against their arm and a blister came up on their arm. And he thought this was a good illustration of the ways that this can happen.
Stigmata.
Certainly my consciousness alters my own self. I'm just saying I don't know about whether it moves that pen. But, you know, I've talked before about how your imagination fires your neurology and physiology the same as the real thing. And I give as an example, you're in a dark alleyway, you hear a movement, you think you're about to be mugged. Within seconds, your pupils dilate, your skin temperature changes, your heart rate changes, your breathing changes, the blood leaves, the gut and goes, the muscles. So you've just had a thought, I'm in danger here. And physiologically, neurologically, everything changes in seconds. So certainly my consciousness is affecting my physiological and neurological state of being all the time. And that's, you know, why I'm so enamored of Alexander technique, because conscious constructive control, I think, is the height of self-mastery. Well, it is self-mastery, yeah, but...
Okay.
Placebo is extraordinary. You can do graphs of placebo. You could take 100 people, tell 20 people they're getting the sugar pill, the others are getting the drug, tell 30 people, tell 40, tell 50 of the 100, and you'll get a straight line graph with tiny standard error. I mean, placebo is so scientifically accurate, but that is one's consciousness affecting one's physiology, neurology.
Yeah. And perhaps just to finish on that, there have been recent circumstances where drugs have just been pulled off their late tests because the placebo's outperforming them.
This is one of the problems with antidepressants. They don't work for 3 weeks. It's not they don't work for 3 weeks. It's the placebo works as well as those drugs for 3 weeks, and so the whole trial's skewed. But if your question is about are the studies about parapsychological phenomena which alter the world, then the answer is yes. At a distance, for example, telepathy, distant healing, all that sort of thing. It's all there. Okay, can we have the next question?
Can I just add something to that particular scene?
Go on then.
I don't know if any of you have read the book by Paul Robertson. It only came out last year, no, I think. And there's a quote, it's slightly free quote of Goethe saying, if there is real commitment, you will be surprised how suddenly things seem to fall into place as if by magic. And that is really, I experience it myself more and more, and I am really surprised. So that is really, something is changing beyond my metabolism, beyond my pupils changing and everything.
Okay, thank you very much. Next question.
Sorry, it's a short optimistic comment, opinion. If we want to obtain enlightenment, I don't think we have to wait 5 years. I think there are teachers in all traditions available now around us. And just out of interest, just to update about the Zika, which was a very secret practice, Pir Vilayat Khan, who spoke at the first conference here, I believe, he inherited a Sufi movement in Europe that came from his father, who moved from India to the West just before the First World War. And since then, there are a whole series of Sufi movements in Europe. So if you want to experience the Zika, it's available within Europe in many different places, within America in many different places. You don't need drugs. I think you just need an open mind and to be prepared to change yourself.
Okay, thank you. Next question or comment.
Hello, my question is prompted by Jude's talk. There's been a lot of talk recently, a lot in the media again, about the future of artificial intelligence. It's perhaps quite an old subject. But in comparing ourselves with computers, we can still have a certain smugness, perhaps, because we are definitely alive. We have a level of awareness, and I guess we have a code of ethics. And so far as I understand computer science, those things can be simulated and or cloned, but not reproduced as such. So my question is there very much left of we humans which cannot be digitized?
Jude?
I suppose it really comes down to where we feel or think or believe physicality arises from. And for me, as I said yesterday, consciousness isn't something we have, it's what we and the whole world are. And having walked between worlds since I was 4 years old, I'm very familiar with the very myriad amazing levels of multidimensional realities and levels of awareness, of which somebody told me once that the physical realm was like spiritual boot camp. Sorry to use the word spiritual, but the most dense realm. So when I've, you know, communicated with discarnate folks, they've always congratulated those of us brave enough to move into physical incarnation. And so on that basis, that the entire cosmos is essentially consciousness exploring itself at many, many different levels, one of the things that we are 13.8 billion years into our cycle of our universe is the ability both to be self-aware ourselves within an intelligent universe and infinite cosmos, but also the ability to create artificial intelligence. But the question then is, regardless of whether such intelligence can clone, apparently, you know, what we're saying, that intelligence is still essentially a mechanistic construction of our ultimately divine consciousness. So I think it still stays artificial, but maybe has a lot of lessons for us as to how we become real and how we treat each other and how we learn to move over from this duality-based, limited, fragmented, diseased perspective of who we are to who we really are. Thank you.
I'd just like to comment on that as well. One of the books that I read about 10 days ago and it's sort of in the pipeline for a proper review is a very short introduction to the future by Jennifer Gidley. And you may know the Oxford University Press series, Very Short Introduction. They're very, very good. I've done the Voltaire one for this one. And I bet you didn't know that Voltaire was a fellow of the Royal Society. Very interesting for his work on Newton. Yeah. Anyway, what the point I wanted to make from this book, which I think she's onto something very important, is the oversimplified picture, maybe, but because of the transhumanist future, which is the mechanized, digitized, upload your brain into a computer type of future, and where we become a new species, we'll be half machine, half human, and what she calls the human-centered future. And the human-centered future, it struck me when I was reading this, the human-centered future is very much where the network sits. And the human-centered future is associated with a holistic understanding of the human being, whereas the transhumanist future is associated with a more mechanistic conception of the human being. So the machine and the human are sort of blurred together. And just as a last remark on this, I was always struck by the phrase, which actually is a Rupert phrase, but used by Rick Tarnas in his book Passion of the Western Mind, when he talks about the mechanomorphism. So we're always accused of being anthropomorphic, but we've actually become mechanomorphic. In other words, we've invented machines, and then we project the idea of the machine out onto the whole cosmos. And that couldn't be more anthropomorphic. So mechanomorphic is actually anthropomorphic. And so having invented something, we project it outwards, and then we explain ourselves in terms of our own projections.
I just want to make a small comment, really, that maybe sometimes I get the impression we don't appreciate really the great mystery that was inhabited by very great sages like Christ and Buddha. 40 years ago, people were claiming, as you read earlier, now we know what the Buddha knew. We keep finding these parallels. I remember my father used to say to us when we were 11 years old, Socrates is mortal, cat is mortal, therefore Socrates is cat. We can find all kinds of little parallels like this, forgetting that give our scientists some power that in the next 40 years also they will discover something. Will that be greater than the Buddha then? And in 400 years they will discover something? So if we already are at the level of the Buddha, heaven help us.
Yes, go on.
Just in terms of the difference between, I guess, humans and machines, as a humanities student, I sort of think about this as part of my degree. And something that we're talking about at lunch as well is the whole idea of creativity and how it doesn't actually only apply to writing an English essay or writing a poem or writing an history of art essay. It's also in terms of mathematics and science as well. And if you didn't have any creativity, then you wouldn't ever find anything new. So, and sometimes it just happens, but it then takes something that you can't, if you haven't got something initially, you can't program it into a machine. So I think the human capacity to kind of make something out of nothing, if that makes sense. I think that's something that we hopefully will continue to hold without above machines.
Okay, well, thank you. Don't forget Nietzsche, who said, in fact, that the wasteland within is the real problem, and the last man alive was going to die because of technology. So there you are. It all goes back to that. Next one. Roger.
very short story from a very earthbound scientist. Some time ago, I got a book which is entitled Amazing and Wonderful Mind Machines You Can Build. So I made this little rotor out of foil, balanced on a needle in a glass jar, and he said 80% of people who really try can move this. So I tried and tried and tried for 10 whole minutes, I think, and then it just went 45 degrees. I was so excited it stopped immediately. But every day for a week, I did it once. So I told my brother, skeptical brother, he said, oh, well, of course, it's easy to imagine it moving. It wasn't really, was it? So in order to prove it to him, I made a very high-tech rotor with which would break an infrared beam. Couldn't move it. It was just my ego came in wanting to prove it to my brother. And that is the bedevils scientists a lot, I think. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Next question.
Microphone is here.
Got the mic?
It's here.
Yeah.
Just want to come back to the question this gentleman asked. I think it's important. What is spiritual? What is not? I just share quick comments. I agree with you. Psychical is not spiritual. In the sense that my understanding of spiritual is being consciousness itself. And consciousness is contentless. So if you are aware of something, it's not spiritual. It should be contentless. There's no content. You cannot aware of things and you say it's spiritual. What I don't agree with you is that the spirituality needs to be strived, needs to be earned by effort. I think spirituality is our innate nature. We don't get it by strive to achieve it. We get it by let it go. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, come on.
In some ways, what you're reflecting here, Simon, is this grace and free will, or grace and effort. You know, what's the relationship between grace and effort? And I remember we had a seminar on this in Regent's College about 20 years ago, and one of the participants who came and talked and in this small group was Guy Claxton. And we were exactly talking about this, and he said, well, I don't think you can't guarantee enlightenment, but you can make yourself enlightenment prone.
That's it exactly. Okay. Right, next question, please.
Sorry, it's not a question, a comment. I couldn't stop the discomfort I was having had to express from Eddie's question, but with all due respect. And I do believe that, or I'm finding it difficult to discriminate the what is spiritual and what is not. I think whatever we do is spiritual. I think it is, if we call it in a very Indian way, Satchit Ananda, truth, consciousness, bliss. Its consciousness is everywhere, this chair, this table, this conversation, this mic. And if we are discriminating, this is spiritual, this is psychic, this is not, we are actually negating the fact that we are inert perfect. The perfection, the religion is the perfection already in human being. We are negating the fact that spirituality comes from the word spiritus, the Latin, that means breath. Breath means aliveness. Whatever makes us alive is spiritual. That little girl coming out of the and looking in the woods in awe, that mysterium, tremendous, that fascinance, that fascinating. I did a little while ago a mindful pee in the toilet. That's spiritual because I'm aware. That makes my, really, whatever I am doing, I'm aware of my consciousness and aware of it. If we are actually devaluing this in any experience, we are saying you and me are different. But consciousness says the real value of spiritual sense is oneness, and we have to retain that. I will finish this comment, which really moved me, by Brother David Stendhal Rust, who said that a mystic is not a special kind of human being. Every human being is a special kind of mystic. Thank you.
Like that. Any comments?
No, that sounds awesome.
I think that's excellent. Okay, next question. Or comment.
Helen, I just wanted to comment on both of these comments and the previous ones. About the spiritual, I understand it's being used very often, and I myself don't know what it means. I have got friends who are talking, we are on spiritual paths. I know them very well. I don't know what they mean ever. But I think there is something like mystical experience, because I did have something what I, about three, five times, six times maybe in my life, which I can't describe otherwise, only a mystical experience, but I always considered it to be a gift. I never thought I could somehow do something which would induce it. And I can't believe, maybe I could through practice and so induce a lot, but not this mystical experience what I had on mind, because I felt it's something that is not part of me, which just came, changed my perception so rapidly. It wasn't something, this was subconscious and something has suddenly brought it up. It was from somewhere else. And I can't repeat it, and unfortunately, although it did have enormous influence on me, and I am grateful that I can remember it, I can't bring it back, even if I wanted to, and sometimes when I need it most, I can't really bring it back. So, I don't know, it seems to be something different from, let's say, meditating regularly and achieving then something. This is a gift, which I don't know why I have received, but I'm very grateful for it. And I just wanted to ask Jude something different. I will be brief because this is possibly my lack of understanding. You might have... on yesterday or when you talked, you about the information you said... You described it, and I want to be brief, so I would just say you said eventually, ultimately, everything is material. Didn't you? Ah, well, then I want to... Yeah. So I miss... Yeah, because that bothered me, so I'm glad that I misunderstood. Yeah.
Jude.
Thank you.
Jude, no, then you. Jude, do you want to say something?
No, I'm fine. I think we've clarified that wasn't what I was saying.
Okay.
I think that's great what you said, Helen, because it brings in Fritjof Capra when he had this life-changing experience of seeing all the molecules dancing. That's happened to me once. Once, as he described it, happened to me. I came out of a meditation center, which was a Rajneesh meditation center. I'd been meditating like mad. I came out and I was walking along the street. It's nighttime. There was a puddle. And suddenly everything... All, there was molecules dancing and vibrating and colors. And I mean, it was just totally that experience. I'll never forget it. But it's happened once, as Fritjof described. And I think Helen described, suddenly you saw that everything was vibrational energy. And it was just the most magnificent experience. I would love to feel that again. But just once, maybe we're only... But that's what Capra's turned... His life turned on that experience, didn't
yes,
it?
Yeah.
I don't know how many people have had it, but wow.
Okay. Yes.
This is just relating to the gift thing. For people who were here yesterday to hear me talk, was about Rilke, who was in a chateau for 13 days, and he wrote 55 Orpheus sonnets in 13 days, which was an extraordinary, inhuman feat. And he described it afterwards as an enigmatic dictation and as an unasked-for gift. So he, even though he wrote beautiful poems throughout his entire life, in my opinion, the Orpheus sonnets are something really, really special, and they were described as his unasked for gift. So maybe this was his once-in-a-lifetime experience of this enigmatic dictation.
Thank you. Well, of course, you all know the Alistair Hardy Centre was set up for experiences like this, but I'd recommend that you go to Andy Newberg's website, because he has now collected over 1,000 experiences and more are coming in. So I think probably what we're going to do is to be able to answer this fairly precisely soon with a good scientific definition of what is what. Okay.
Can I ask a question also?
Yes.
Has it now become agreed by people that spirituality is Eastern and science is Western?
No.
How is it I'd never hear anybody refer to anything from the Christian tradition? Are they without any spirituality? You read two or three books of Eastern spirituality and you think this is it, as if somebody could read two or three books of physics and think now they know about physics. There is a whole practice that is required in Christianity also. And in a way, it surprises me that we can be so cavalier about this terminology. And what is the practice? Occasionally somebody has a startling experience. Nobody needs to deny this. But is this... Now, of course, when we look at other cultures, we look telescopically. We look at our own culture microscopically. So we select something that more or less fits our program and say, this is Eastern. I actually invite you, if spirituality means anything at all, if mystical experience means anything at all, it cannot be limited to one locality, one language, one religion. Otherwise, it is not real spirituality.
I agree. I still like the comment of Jatinan Saraswati when he said that quite often you're given one such experience and then that's a leader for your life and directs you.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to remember. Could I have the next question?
Hello, 1, 2, 1, 2. Oh, it's on. I have a question. And also, I had something that I wanted to respond to when we had the whole conversation regarding the drugs. And I tried to let it go, and then I couldn't let it go. And I thought, oh, I'll just be brave and put forward a comment and also a question. I think it's quite important, particularly because there's an array of people here from extensive backgrounds and have done incredible work, not to put... that's what I'm trying to say. That the word drugs for everything, it puts plant medicine that's been used for thousands of years into the band of drugs which is deemed illegal. And I think why I'm quite passionate about it, and it ties in with Eddie's question with the spirituality, is I wouldn't be here today and I wouldn't be doing the course that I'm doing had I not undertaken ayahuasca. I did 5 ceremonies of ayahuasca in San Pedro on my 30th birthday three years ago. And from that, I had an amazing spiritual experience, but also psychological experience as well. And I went into it from no belief system, no preference, no judgment, and from a quite mindfulness perspective. And I had an experience of divine love, which was extraordinary. And during that process, so that's why I'm here and doing the course that I'm doing now. I've effectively changed careers because of that. But from that experience, I noticed, I went in with quite a scientific viewpoint, funnily enough, and I noticed that there was a call and response between the shaman with the Icaros and the singing, and with the medicine that was in my system, there was a physical innate response in my body, which I was noticing. And I wrote this in my journal. I thought that was really interesting between the call and response. And I wondered, do you know of anything to do with either fungus or plants that people have done between music or singing or talk or some sort of communication that's been verbal? And has there been any kind of response or anything in that area? Yeah, sorry, I'm really nervous. I'm like, oh, I'm like shaking. Sorry.
Interesting question. And
certainly with the ecos, I had some experience of these musics when I was traveling in Latin America, and they're astonishing, like old folk tunes in England. These are working songs. We have now lullabies, the songs that send people to sleep, but because we don't know, we have originally the songs for working, songs for that sort of work, songs for playing, songs for that sort of play, this sort of play, sleeping, waking, dancing, courting, everything. Everything has a song. These songs act in the world, and that's why they're spells. And so these Ikaros also act in the world. They act on the world in the sense they're spells. They're instrumental. And so regarding the research on fungus and sound and plants and sound, there's some work. There's a blossoming field called plant bioacoustics. Turns out that plants make noises. We've known for a while that they make noise in their trunks, in the trees' trunks, when their little bubbles snapping. But people have found that their roots don't only make noise, but also respond to sounds of certain frequencies over others. And bacteria as well, responding to sounds and using sound potentially as a way to sense the presence of a group of bacteria, a way of sort of collective sensing. So there, these fields are young. I didn't know if that answers or helps.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I think we'll have to end there because I see our time is over. Let me thank you all very much indeed for your questions.
So, it's been a tremendous conference, and a huge amount of effort has gone into it from many, many different people. So I'd like to thank, first of all, the speakers. And I know how much trouble all the speakers have taken in preparing their work and presenting it to us with such eloquence and brilliance. And so if you'd all join me, please, in thanking the speakers. And I think maybe a standing ovation would be... Then I'd like to thank the students for their video performance. I'm thanking them in anticipation that the video is going to be wonderful, of course. But it's been very nice to have your presence here, and it's been a very good record of this very important conference. Then I would like to thank Marilyn and Michelle, who've been did all the work on the registration. I think you were helping. You didn't, right? Well, you did. Well, you were there as a support system anyway, I'm sure. And Martin, our sound man, and please a round of applause for Martin. who prevents us from getting our wires too crossed gives us some sound. And Chiara, I'd like to thank Chiara. Was Chiara here? In absentia. Well, let's have a round of applause for Chiara. We need to report it. Because she is the sharp end all your inquiries and everything. And I do encourage you to book in for our next meetings, and you've got all the details anyway. And last of all, I'd like to thank you for coming and making conference such a wonderful experience all round. So I think you can give yourselves a round of applause as well.
And I would like to thank David for everything that he's done. So a big round of applause for David.